welcome to the Hometown Real Estate Heroes Podcast. My name is Mitch Steven, and I am the founder, the sponsor, and sometimes even the host of this podcast. And this podcast is designed specifically to help you achieve your financial freedom, no matter where you have to go to find that independence. Our mission is to help you fire your boss and quit your job so that you can free up 2,600 hours a year to find out who you're supposed to be and to become the person you are supposed to become on this planet. So I invite you to subscribe, like, and share so that you can watch others that are on their way or have already accomplished this financial independence and are well on their way to becoming the person they are supposed to be. If you know of a guest that should be on this podcast, please go to 1000houses.com. That's 1000houses.com/podcast2. That's the number 2, /apply.
Hello, and welcome to this episode of Hometown Real Estate Heroes. Today, we are talking to Sean Davis. He is the founder of Live Salt and Stone, a really, really cool website where you can look at different projects that they're doing. He specializes in home flipping. So you can check out Live Salt and Stone and follow those projects, see what they're doing. But yeah, we're super excited to have you here today to talk a little bit more about house flipping. So welcome to the show, Sean.
I'm happy to be here. Happy to share whatever knowledge I can for your listenership and people that are interested in flipping in general. So yeah, I'm excited.
Yeah, very cool. So first of all, I guess, tell me what got you into house flipping? What kind of pushed that need? Why are we doing this thing?
Yeah, so my background is I spent 22 years in financial services. So I was a financial advisor and had my own practice, used to host a radio program in Sacramento about investments and investment resources. And so I'd actually gotten to a place in my life where I just wasn't fulfilled with what I was doing. I didn't love it. And my wife and I, Jen, were high school sweethearts. We've been married for 27 years. We have 4 boys. Today our oldest is 25, and then we've got one that's 23, and then we've got 16 and 14. And so, you know, part of me really didn't want them to see me living an example of being stuck in a business that I hated just because the money was good. And so I came to my wife at one point, I want to say in 2017, and said, I think if I stay in this business, it's going to end up killing me. I'm going to have a heart attack or a stroke because of it. And she says, well, what are you going to do about it? And I said, I think I'm going to sell it. I think I'm going to get out of the business. And so we ended up finding a buyer and selling it and got out of it completely in October of 2018. And she asked me before I'd ever sold it, what do you think you're going to do? And I'm like, I don't know. And she's all, does that worry you that you don't have a plan on the opposite side? I said, here's all I know. I think I'm faithful. I'm a spiritual guy. So I think God's calling me to the next chapter of my life, and whatever that is will be revealed. And so we did find a buyer. We sold the practice. And like a lot of people, I think we were a bit enamored with Chip and Joanna Gaines on their Fixer Upper show. And as a financial advisor, I knew I could control the money. I knew a little bit about real estate. I knew that this idea of taking a house that was in poor condition and renovating it and repairing it had a lot of appeal to me. And I felt like, why don't we try that? And so we bought a house in October 2018, and in 4 months had renovated it, sold it. And then I stepped on the gas pedal and bought 5 more houses.
Oh, wow.
In about a 3-month period of time. And brought my oldest son involved. He became our project manager, and it became really a family business. So everyone down to our 14-year-old, he's part of Demo and Distraction. You'll often find him on top of a roof or swinging a hammer, trying to break some mirror or some piece of drywall or whatever, but it's become a family business for us. And so we've now flipped 10 houses in total. We got 3 more in the pipeline. And I would call us a high-end flipper. We're not one of these families that typically, or flippers that come in and buy something and then put 20 grand in it, hoping to make 10 or 20 grand. We're usually doing complete gut jobs of the houses, often adding space to houses, adding square footage to the houses. So our projects can take anywhere from, 9 months to a year and a half before they're done. But it's just been an awesome ride thus far. It's been an incredible experience. And I think it's awesome that we get to do it as a family.
Very cool. So now I like this idea of the high end flip, because like you said, one of the most common things that we hear about is this kind of, you buy the house really cheap. You do a bunch of cosmetic stuff and then you turn around and you're done within like what, 3 to 6 months.
Lipstick on a pig.
That's
they
right.
Call it lipstick on a pig.
So have you found that kind of taking a little bit longer and kind of putting more into it actually gives you better results in the long run?
Well, if you're talking about results, meaning money or return, then I would absolutely say that that's the case. Yes. Sorry about that. So what I mean by that is that there's so much competition in the lower levels of flipping. I mean, everybody and their brother thinks that they can buy a house at the lower levels of investment and cost, price point wise. We just found like if we were trying to buy a house, often we were looking at something that would be, you know, 20 offers, 30 offers for the same types of projects. And so as a financial advisor, I try to pride myself on being wise and smart. And so I started to pay attention to maybe some opportunities to do some more extensive remodels. And so here is my logic behind that. You know, we have a great contractor and we can build additional square footage for somewhere between $200 and $250 a square foot. So if I can find a house that has a bigger lot that I can add square footage onto the backside of it, you know, for example, let's say 1,000 square feet, it might cost me $200 or $250,000 to add that. But if in that market, the prices for the real estate once sold are in the $350 or $400 a square foot, by adding an extra 1,000 square feet to the project, I've insulated my profitability to some degree because, you know, in those neighborhoods and that, and fewer people compete with me because not everybody has the resources to be able to buy properties at the price point we buy them at, or to renovate through the timelines that we do. And not everyone can hold onto a property for a year before they see some sort of a return from it. So it was just my way of trying to be strategic about what we bought and try to maximize our ability to make a profit on it.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. So now when you're doing this, is this something that you talked about, you know, your 14-year-old son being charged and being in charge of like the demolition and all that good stuff? So yeah. So is this something that you all do a lot of the work by yourselves? Or is this something you hire out?
It's something, a great question. It's something that's actually evolved over time. I think the very first house that we did, like we were very active in that renovation. And so a lot of the work, whether it be putting up shiplap or whether it be demo or whether it be hauling or whatever, we ended up doing because at that time I really wasn't sure what my time was going to be occupied doing anyway. So I had the freedom, I had the time, I bought the house. Why not learn a little bit in the process? But as time has gone on, you know, when you get into architecture, engineering, truss design, you know, sprinkler systems, you know, it's just beyond our scope. I'm not a contractor. I'm not licensed as a contractor. So, you know, I really figured out a way that it felt like it'd be better to bring in the professionals. And if I had the profit insulation, you know, because I think that's the challenge, you know, it's very difficult for somebody that's at the lower end of the flipping game to bring in a contractor because a contractor can suck up a lot of that profitability that you would have hoped to have made if you didn't. But when you're dealing about adding a 1200 square feet, 1600 square feet, 2500 square feet to a house, that's way outside of our realm of capability. So what has actually happened is it's allowed us the freedom to be able to hire professionals. I think my strength is in seeing past what something is now. So in other words, I can walk into a house and from a spatial planning perspective, see the pain points, see the area where I think it can be improved, see past a wall, see how opening up this way or that way, what it would look like. I can imagine that in my mind. My wife, she has a difficult time doing that. So once the house is actually in form, her specialty is actually the design elements. And so she can really make the house beautiful and pretty. She's really current on design. But what we've transitioned into doing is that like at Live Salt and Stone, we make all of our own barn doors. So we'll add a barn door to our house. We've made shutters. We've made fencing. We've made mantles. We've done what we can. We try to put a little bit of our family love into each house with some design elements that we did make ourselves so that we felt like we made a significant contribution in the way that we're comfortable making a contribution to the house.
So that's one way that you've been able to kind of stay sane while managing your business.
Yes.
And also kind of, I like that idea of like division of labor and understanding who is best suited for which parts of the project so that you can kind of divide that out and spread it out to make the overall business run a little bit more efficiently. Are there some other things that you have found to be helpful as you run this business and as you work to maybe if you're planning to scale it up, or just, or just things that have helped you kind of just be more efficient with your time and focus on the things that are really going to increase your profitability?
Well, I think the challenge for most people is, you know, if you're going to get into flipping houses, you know, being a jack of all trades, but master of none. I think to your point, whether it was by design or default, it certainly wasn't by design because we didn't expect to, you know, have the whole family involved. But I'll give you an example. My specialty is on the acquisition side. Like I will look at a lot of properties, review them, look at them online, look at the neighborhoods, look at the price points. You know, obviously as a financial advisor, I'm best at dealing with the money. Oftentimes we have to find hard money lenders to help us out with this because I don't have unlimited resources. And so I'm the guy that deals with hard money lenders. I'm the guy that deals with, you know, contractors, if we have a problem with them. I can see past what a current house is and what it could become. Colby, my oldest son, has just been a godsend to us. He's actually become our lead project manager. So it's his job to take whatever vision that we have and make sure that the contractor's on budget, on time. He's checking QC, quality control, to make sure everything's being handled the way that we would expect it. Like the least favorite part of the whole process for me is about a week or two before it's actually finished. It feels like there's no way that they can get everything done that they need to get done. All I look around and see thousands of things that need to be addressed. Colby, he has no problem with that. If I were to go in there, it would immediately make me stressed dealing with that kind of stuff. My wife, Jen, she can see past. I'll make a suggestion on the design. She's like, nah, you don't want to do that. That's not current. That's not what's on trend. That's not what people are looking for. So, you know, I think for us, it was really a beautiful harmony of our talents individually that have allowed us to be able to, you know, do this business together and have it work. If I had to be the guy that had to be the design guy and manage the contractors and all that other stuff, you know, I probably wouldn't still be in the business because it just would be too much for me, you know?
Yeah. So I love that. I love being able to recognize your strengths, recognize the strengths of the people around you, and then make sure everybody is taking care of those strengths rather than everybody floundering around with things that, you know, floundering around with their weaknesses.
So, yes. Agreed.
Yeah. So that's really great. So you talked a little bit about some of the obstacles you had to overcome, you know, for instance, you know, having to make sure you can access these hard money lenders. But what are some of the other kind of obstacles or stumbling blocks that you run into as you are growing this business, as you are working on making sure that you're profitable through your house flipping?
Yeah, this business is not for the faint of heart. It is a business that represents a lot of risk. But thankfully, I'm a guy that doesn't shy away from risk. And so in terms of obstacles, we've had everything that you could imagine. I mean, I've had contractors milk us for draws and then only to uncover later that they had done shoddy work. And because we're inexperienced, we didn't know. It was only when bringing in another contractor that pointed out this is supposed to be 2 inches and not an inch and a half. This is supposed to be vented this way, not that way, et cetera. We've had challenges with individual properties, surprises that we didn't expect. So for example, I brought a house that I fully expected to be able to have an ADU or an accessory dwelling unit, a granny flat, you know, something that so we were going to be able to turn that into, you know, what we felt was livable square footage, you know, update the design. Well, it was on the assessor rolls back to 1957, but it was actually technically built in 1952. And because there was no permit for it was originally built, the city made us tear it down. So here's an example of something that we felt like we were going to be able to renovate and bring into new, and it'd be a space for somebody to take advantage of if they had an adult parent that they were caring for, or, you know, a child that just, or an adult kid that just didn't want to leave the nest yet or whatever. So that was a challenge. COVID was significant. You know, when COVID began, we had four projects in development and we were going through ARC and engineering at the time. And COVID literally cost us 7-8 months. And so many of these houses, you're talking about holding costs of $5,000 each per month, you know, because of the price point and how much we were putting into them and stuff like that. So, you know, COVID created significant delays. And then since then, we've had pricing problems. You know, everything is more expensive. Lumber's more expensive. You know, countertops, quartz, granite's more expensive than it was. You had supply chain disruptions. So, you know, this business is a challenging business. And I understand why people go broke doing it, you know, because you can't weather too many of those big storms, those big hits, and still make profitability. That's one of the reasons why I'm grateful that we looked at adding space to houses. Because I felt like that was a bit of an insulator. You know, if I know by adding 1,000 square feet, it's gonna increase our potential profitability by 150 or 200 grand, that can account for a lot of surprises along the way that you can deal with. You know, it doesn't count for everything, but it can account for a lot of the surprises. So, you know, we've had problems with HOAs not letting us do a certain paint color. We've had problems with project managers just quitting one day and leaving us high and dry, who happened to be my brother-in-law, just leaving us high and dry on houses. So like, it's just, you know, you if you get into flipping, if you get into real estate renovations, et cetera, just anticipate that you're going to have a lot of things that you didn't know could happen that are all going to cost you money.
So you talked a little bit about having that extra space built in because of your model of adding extra space. So what are some of the other things that you can do? I mean, you talked about that $5,000 a month holding on your properties as you know, just to hold it as you're going through COVID. So what are some of the things that you've done to make sure you can do that? How do you cover that $5,000 per month trying to cash flow that when you've got COVID, you can't move forward on your projects? Like what have you done to kind of help with that?
Well, you know, thankfully, when I sold my business, I did get a chunk of cash, and the cash that I got was able to help us weather those storms. But, you know, it's not like I have unlimited resources along the way either, you know. So this has been a learning experience. Like, for example, you know, through COVID, we were having significant delays with architecture and engineering. Well, I had never done significant remodels like that. The previous 6 houses that we had done, we'd all stayed within the same footprint. And so we wanted to do additions. Well, we started doing these additions right before COVID. So to answer your question, I'm just, you know, it was not like I had the foresight to go, hey, listen, you know, a world pandemic is going to happen. So I better have a, you know, war chest of a couple hundred grand behind me. But, you know, thankfully that is what happened, because I could have very easily, you know, been the victim of the circumstances of COVID, like any restaurateur or gym owner right now, you know, because of the timing of it all, if I was thinly margined. So, you know, it's again, not a business for the faint of heart. Like when you get into it, there's significant rewards. You can make a good living, but there's also significant opportunities for you to experience challenges. And the challenges are always costly. You know, they are always more expensive and costlier than what you anticipate.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. So we talked a little bit about, you talked a little bit about it. This is kind of a family affair now. And you talked briefly about you know, having a problem with, you know, your project manager quitting, who happened to be your brother-in-law. So what are some of the things that you do to make sure that working with family doesn't kind of get in the way? I mean, because that's one of the things, right? They always tell you, like, be careful of doing business with your family. So how do you make that work, and how do you keep those relationships intact?
Well, I think it comes back to something that I've always subscribed to, you know, that there's never a problem making a withdrawal out of someone's emotional bank account as long as you've made more deposits than the withdrawal that you're making. So like in our family, we love hard. We have a great relationship with our kids. And, you know, I have very high expectations of my son, for example. And so we certainly have had, you know, blowout days or arguments or whatever. But, you know, the thing is, we always come back to what's most important, and that is the family. You know, I've taught the kids to never let anything get in the way of our relationship, whether it be politics or religion or sexuality or any of that other stuff. We're family first. I love you. I want the best for you. And so, but, you know, yeah, I have certain expectations. And so we've had some significant disagreements with our son, but, you know, at 25, he's done an excellent job at being a project manager, and he's learning every time. And I don't expect him to be perfect, but, you know, I think that as time goes on, I've seen him rise to the challenge. There was a point during COVID, for example, where I kind of checked out mentally. I'm like, how long is this going to last? I mean, none of these projects are moving. All I'm seeing is my bank account go like this. And I'm like, oh, I can't deal with this again. I mean, it reminded me of 2009 when I was in financial services. And thankfully, he saw where I was at, knew I didn't have a lot of capacity at that time to deal with it. And he stepped in, you know, so that he made a huge deposit into my bank account at that time. And so, like, I've given him a lot of grace. I think if you have good family relationships already, I think you can take on something like this. But if your family relationships are marginal or stretched or, you know, tenuous right now, then I think, you know, getting into business together or doing business together is probably not the best idea, because it's a recipe for challenges. The brother-in-law, he was a realtor. He helped us buy the projects. You know, he felt like he could manage the projects. But the reality of it is my opinion is he got in over his head with some of these remodels, couldn't back up what he had told me. And instead of sharing that with me, decided that the better thing to do would be to just just eject out of the whole situation. And so, you know, but like my wife and I, we've been through some challenges. We've been married for 27 years. We're high school sweethearts. We've weathered some storms. And so this was like nothing else. It's not going to kill us. We just got to pick ourselves up and figure it out and move forward. And that's exactly what we did.
Very nice. So now you mentioned a little bit about being spiritual and having that faith in that path and setting your path the proper way. Is that something that's playing a role in your business and your family dynamics at all, making sure that you keep that faith in there and that you are kind of sensitive to the path you should be on?
Yeah. You know, I can't imagine dealing with what we did in this last year with COVID, with the delays, with no action, with house sitting, with carrying costs, with now everything more expensive than what we'd originally expected, without faith. I mean, when people encounter hard times, I mean, that's where the faith, you got to believe that it's all going to work out for your benefit. For me personally, you know, I've been through enough challenges. Back in 2009, like, you know, my wife and I, we went through the fire. People didn't want to make any investment decision back in 2009. We had the Great Recession. We had the fall. Everything in the stock market had fallen 50%, and people just ceased wanting to make any investments. So my income dried up, mm-hmm. You know, so at that time, you know, to go through that financial challenge, to be in a situation where we had to file for bankruptcy personally and not professionally, but personally, and walk away from our house and move to a new area. I mean, like that kind of stuff. But what ended up happening is it led to the greatest blessing that I'd ever had in business after that, that it was darkest right before the dawn. So that the mindset of being faithful, being hopeful, being positive, you know, understanding that even though you are going through something difficult that you don't want to deal with, that is not fun, that is highly uncomfortable, yet you know you're growing through that. I'm seeing my kids grow through that. They're seeing how I'm handling the adversity that I'm facing right now. And it's giving them a window, an idea of the type of things that they're going to have to do when they face adversity in the future. And so I think that that's a blessing. I think that that's a, you know, it's a beautiful thing for our family to be able to have them witness us struggling right now at this stage, because when I was building my financial services businesses, that there were 4 and 5 and 6, they could, it's not like they saw any of that or could process any of it. So now as adult children, to see what we've weathered, to see what we're dealing with, to see how we deal with it, to see that we rely on our faith to get through it, you know, I think that's a blessing. I think that that's a powerful thing for them to witness.
Very, very cool. So now, as we get ready to close out here, if there is somebody out there considering starting in house flipping and starting this journey, what is something that they should know? What is your number one piece of advice as they embark on this journey and get ready to get started? How can they plan to be successful?
This is not a get rich quick business. It just is not. And people have the expectation that it's easy money, that it's quick money. I mean, honestly, doing it the right way. I mean, there's a lot of people that are in this business that don't do it the right way. And what I mean by that is they don't pull permits. They don't have the oversight that they do. They deal with unlicensed contractors. They do shoddy work behind the scenes to make it less expensive. I mean, if you're going to do this business, what I didn't want to have happen is have, you know, us be involved in some lawsuit 5 years down the line because somebody realized we built a nightmare, you know, behind the walls kind of thing. So, you know, I guess what I would recommend is I would think very, very strongly and very, very long about whether or not this is a business that you have the skill set for. Can you manage people? Can you have tough conversations with contractors? Do you have a war chest big enough to withstand challenges that arise financially? You know, are you a person that can walk into a situation and embrace the fact that you don't know what you don't know, and some of the surprises that you're going to get are either going to cost you delays on the time side or cost you more money? So, you know, I think that this is a business that people can do very well in if they approach it the right way. But I think it comes at a learning curve cost, and it's just the education is really, really expensive. You know, like doing it the right way, the education is really expensive. So I love it. You know, I like making houses beautiful. I like going into a neighborhood and seeing a diamond in the rough. And I like the feeling that I get when people see what we created and they love it and they smile and they're going, ooh, and awe and how beautiful it is. You know, for example, we have a house right now that's for sale. We completed, it took us 2 years to get this done because of COVID delays, et cetera. 3600 San Ysidro Way in Sacramento. It's a beautiful, beautiful home. And I look at it and go, man, look what we built. Look what we accomplished. And so the satisfaction of knowing that we were able to get through it and get it done is great, but it's not for the faint of heart. Make sure you got a lot of money. Make sure you can deal with uncertainty. Make sure you have an acumen for dealing with people and contractors and sniffing out people that are BSing you. And then I think you could have a go at it.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for joining us on the Hometown Real Estate Heroes podcast. And once again, if you could just let our listeners know where they can find out more about you.
Yeah, we're at livesaltandstone.com. That's on the web. You can find us on Instagram at livesaltandstone there as well. That's the best way to reach out to us. Send us a direct message. You know, say hello. If you want to talk with us about anything, that'd be great. I'm more than open to that. But livesaltandstone.com.
All right. Thank you so much. And once again, Sean Davis, Live Salt and Stone, thank you for joining us on the Hometown Real Estate Heroes podcast. And we will see you all next time.
Great. Nice to be with you.
This is Mitch Stephen, and I would like to thank all the listeners for tuning into the Hometown Real Estate Heroes podcast. If you would like to be a guest on our show, please go to 1000houses.com/podcast, /apply. We invite all our listeners to share our Hometown Real Estate Heroes podcast, and also we'd appreciate it if you'd rate and or review our show wherever you listen to your podcast. It would be greatly appreciated. It is our mission to spotlight local real estate entrepreneurs that are killing it in their market and to highlight their strategies and their personal story. It is our intention to help real estate investors learn and grow. Please be sure to subscribe because we are sure that you will find very valuable nuggets in our content-driven episodes. This podcast is my way of giving back, and I would like to personally thank all of the Hometown Real Estate Heroes that have participated or that intend to participate. And I'd like to thank all of our listeners and hope that you tune in and share this with your friends and family often. Thank you very much. We're out of here.